Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, May 10, 2024. President Salva Kiir says he's hopeful the talks in Nairobi will open a new chapter in South Sudan's history book.
I'm confident that these efforts will yield a similar result as the country prepares for the general election this year.
And South Sudanese students affected by the conflict in Sudan say they need support to continue their studies.
We don't know exactly our direction from here. We are somehow traumatized because we are aging, first of all, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't even know what to do at that moment.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Leaders from South Sudan's government and some opposition groups are in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, to find solutions to the vicious cycle of conflict in their country. William Sande Mabor reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Addressing delegates at the launch of a high-level peace mediation at the State House in Nairobi Thursday, Kenyan President William Ruto says unity of the South Sudanese is important.
We are proud of the Tumaini Initiative, the high-level mediation of South Sudan, bringing together eight categories of parties and groups. It has made significant progress in defining a mediation framework, developing rules of procedure, and setting the agenda for the process. This initiative exemplifies the Pan-African policy of African solutions to African challenges, contributing to the Silencing of Guns in Africa initiative and fostering an environment of transformational development in South Sudan, our region, and possibly the entire continent.
The talks bring together the government and several opposition groups that did not sign a transitional peace agreement set out in 2018. That agreement was meant to end conflict among various groups and communities that has claimed tens of thousands of lives for more than a decade. South Sudan President Salva Kiir told the gathering he is hopeful the initiative launched in Kenya will end violence. He urged the parties to talk peace and end what he called the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
I am confident that these efforts will yield a similar result as the country prepares for the general election this year. The peace negotiations I am opening today between the government of South Sudan and the whole-out opposition groups started in Rome 5 years ago under the Santo Egidio community. I must thank His Holiness Pope Francis and the Santo Egidio community.
Pagan Amum, leader of the opposition Real SPLM group, spoke on behalf of other opposition groups. He said time has come for serious discussions to address the root of the conflicts in South Sudan.
We need to stop seeing ourselves as enemies. We are brothers and sisters. President Kiir, we are brothers and sisters. We are the founding mothers and fathers of this new nation. And to achieve that, we have to engage in dialogue. We have to be positive, we have to overcome this hatred that has filled our hearts. This is not time for that. I believe this is our last opportunity, and we must take this seriously and engage in dialogue. What we need is a serious dialogue of agreements, address the root causes, and come out with a new social contract.
U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Mike Hammer, says President Joe Biden's administrations want to see the transitional government of national unity preparing grounds for the December elections.
The region can ill afford further conflict, and the South Sudanese people who have waited far too long must see their aspirations met. In this vein, let me reiterate the United States position that allocating further financial resources for election preparations absent urgent action by the transitional government would send the wrong message. We will not support an electoral process that, without urgent action by the transitional government, would not be free, fair, or credible. For an electoral process to be credible, we must see the South Sudan government devoting its own resources to support.
The six African heads of the state and dignitaries from the European Union and the Troika nations took part in the opening of the mediation talks. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor, Nairobi, Kenya.
Some South Sudanese students who escaped Sudan's conflict say they need help to continue with their education in South Sudan. One student worries about his dreams of completing his university education in South Sudan. Viola Elias has this report for VOA from Juba.
26-year-old Chong Yang, a South Sudanese student who was pursuing a bachelor degree in business administration and management in Sudan, says students who have escaped fighting in the neighboring country are facing difficulties in Juba. Yang says many students escaped to various parts of South Sudan after fighting erupted in Khartoum last year and quickly spread to other parts of the country.
We don't know exactly our direction from here. We are somehow traumatized because we are aging, first of all, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't even know what to do at the moment. And we're just stuck at the situation where we don't know how to get out of, you know, and it's not in our hands. Starting over again from zero is also a decision that needs resources, needs time, needs a lot. So the situation is really hard for us, the students who came from Sudan.
Last year, the University of Juba admitted medical students from universities in Sudan who were affected by the conflict in parts of the country. Yang says despite the good gesture from the University of Juba administration officials, the enrollment process remains tedious.
They tell you to come on Monday, come next Monday, and now we are in we are ending April, we are entering May, and we have started it since September of last year. In the beginning, there was a hope that maybe I will continue my studies soon, but now it has gone to a year without studies. And I think for people who have put their hopes in finishing earlier to do other things for their life, it's really a very difficult situation, and some of us also don't have the money. University of Juba asked because they are asking a lot of money.
This program contacted the administration of University of Juba several times for comment, but was told the public relations officers for the university were not available. A student, Boutros Nicola Bazia, was pursuing a degree in medicine at Al-Kalm College of Science and Technology in Omdurman, Sudan. He says the conflict that broke out in April of last year has shattered his dreams of becoming a doctor. Bazia has created an online platform as he waits for his studies to resume.
I start working because I have another passion besides doing medicine. I'm a podcaster or a content creator and also project coordinator. So I started my own business, created my own platform, and I'm now working and waiting for the study to end.
Hania Hassan Abdulhamid studied pharmacy at the African International University in Khartoum before the fighting broke out in Sudan. She says instead of sitting at home, she enrolled in a pharmaceutical college in Juba to continue her studies.
As you know, there is no college of pharmacy at the University of Juba. They are working on opening a pharmacy college, but for us who were in second or third year, it would be difficult for us to start from first year. So I applied to College of Pharmacy and I was accepted. So right now I'm continuing there but pursuing a diploma in pharmacy.
David Loela Ladu, Director General at the National Ministry of Education, says most students who fled from Sudan are now taking classes in primary, secondary, and universities across the country.
Absolutely, absolutely. Others in medicine, others in a different specialization. We don't segregate. And even we don't want to have this system of saying refugee schools are different from the indigenous people. No, no, no. If you go to any school here in the town, they have been registered. Leave alone in the state, leave alone those who are in camp where they are there. But they are not alone because we have the host communities.
Lado urged returning students to be resilient and focus on their education at various high schools and universities across the country. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Chad, where the government there has ordered immediate deployment of troops to maintain peace, especially in the capital, N'Djamena, after provisional results of the May 6 presidential elections surprisingly published on Thursday night declared transitional ruler General Mohamed Idriss Déby winner with 61% of the votes. The main challenger, Success Masra, claims he won with over 73% of the votes. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé in neighboring Cameroon.
Residents in Chad's capital N'Djamena say they awoke Friday morning to the sound of heavy gunshots. 45-year-old Umar Sally, a resident of the Machaga neighborhood, spoke to VOA on Friday morning via a messaging app.
Si jamais ce sont les forces de défense et sécurité qui tirent, je pense qu'elles sont...
Omar says the shooting may have been ordered by Chad's government to intimidate those objecting to the results of Chad's May 6 presidential elections. Public Security and Immigration Minister Mohamed Chafatin Mogui said in a release Thursday that enough police have been deployed to stop what he called the use of weapons and explosives all over Chad, but specifically in N'Djamena. According to the provisional results, transitional president General Mohamed Déby is the official winner with 61.3% of the votes, more than the 50% needed to avoid a runoff. Members of the opposition and the public say they are surprised Orange published the figures in 3 days, instead of 15 days after the voting as stated in the electoral code. Ange says it is legal to publish results within 15 days. Déby, in a late-night message, said he is very grateful to the majority that voted for him.
Au vu de cette large victoire, je suis désormais le président élu de tous les Tchadiens.
Déby says he is now the democratically elected president of all Tchadiens, including opposition party leaders who lost. Déby says he is particularly delighted because he scored a resounding victory and that he is going to work immediately to fulfill his electoral promises. Déby said he will concentrate on providing jobs for unemployed youths and strengthening Chad's internal security to guarantee peace and stability. And he says more than 75% of the registered 8.2 million voters took part in the vote. Déby's main challenger, Success Masra, scored 18.53% of the vote, while Abel Pahimi Padake, the first transitional prime minister, got 7.91%. Masra had earlier declared that he won a resounding victory in the first round of voting, but that his victory was stolen by Déby. He spoke in a message broadcast on Facebook Thursday afternoon.
Tout est accompli, la victoire du peuple est éclatante.
He says Chadians voted en masse to say enough is enough to the over three-decade dictatorial rule of Chad's former president Idriss Déby Itno and his son, Mohamed Idriss Déby. Masra says all his supporters and security forces should strongly oppose an attempt by Déby to steal victory from the people. Masra said all Chad civilians should calmly mobilize and demonstrate peacefully for the stolen victory to be restored. Opposition and civil society members say there is perceivable tension that may cause chaos in Chad following the publication of the results. Candidates have 5 days from the date of publication of provisional results to file complaints at the Constitutional Council. Definitive results will be declared by Chad's Constitutional Council on May 21. David took power in April 2021 after the death of his father, Idriss Deby Itno, who died on the front line of a war against rebels after ruling for 30 years. Mokish Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenyans mourn victims of floods. Stay tuned for that story after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. That's nearing 240 and about 235,000 displaced. Kenyans are mourning their lost loved ones and trying to rebuild their weeks of heavy rains that resulted in deadly floods and landslides. And it's not over yet, as more rains is expected through June. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has this report.
At Mathare North Primary School, Beatrice Achieng has been preparing food the past 2 weeks for the hundreds of flood victims who are being sheltered in this internally displaced people campsite. She's with Tushinde Children's Trust, a charity working in Nairobi's Mathare and Kiambu informal settlements.
They are living here almost 300 people, and I'm only able to feed 200. There's a county government organization bringing food called Dish in a County. They are also helping us.
Monica Musioka came here after losing her home in the recent floods. Her four children are not able to go to classes.
We hope government will help us with the books to build classes so that our children may return to school to continue learning.
This week, Kenya President William Ruto, who visited the Mathare area, said $7.6 million will be used to rebuild all the schools affected by the floods before reopening them. Also, his administration plans to compensate the victims for 3 months.
Wale wote, households, 1,040 hapa Nairobi.
All the 40,000 households that have been displaced by floods in Nairobi, the government will give them 10,000 shillings so they can settle somewhere as they wait for the government to sort them out.
Back at the camp, another victim, Felix Ocheng, told us it was around 10 p.m. when the water started flowing into his home 2 weeks ago. He says that while this place is not ideal, he has nowhere else to go.
We can't go back because our house is marked for demolition 30 meters from the river. Everything will be demolished.
In the Mathare area, some homes that have been built along the river are already being brought down. Director of Meteorological Services David Gikungu says the events of the past weeks have surpassed anything that resulted from last year's floods caused by the El Nino weather phenomenon, which he notes continues to influence heavily what's happening now. Because of that, he says, it's difficult to predict when the rains will subside.
We have referred to April as the peak, because that is what is normal. March, April, May, and April normally has the heaviest rainfall. We want to see whether under the features of this influence, whether even in this season, 2024, it will still be the peak or whether it's going to go down.
Meanwhile, Peter Murger, Kenya Red Cross Disaster Risk Reduction Manager, says what's happening in neighboring countries also directly affects Kenya.
Yesterday, we were having an issue whereby in the western side of Kenya, actual North Rift region, West Pokot, one of the markets was disrupted because of flooding in Uganda. Up north in the upper eastern region, when there is heavy rains in Ethiopia, it's flooding in Kenya, you know, and likewise on the Somali borders and Tanzania.
He also says more people may be displaced if more dams overflow.
Places like Tana River, they're still predisposed to issues, to emergencies. Places like the low-lying areas of the West Kenya, the Homa Bay, you know, the countries that are around the lake region, the backflow of Lake Victoria, which is really now very full.
For now, keep an umbrella handy, as this week's forecast says rain is still expected in many parts of the country, but the storms won't be as intense as they've recently been. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In mid-April, the United States deployed a Tomahawk missile system to the Philippines, a move condemned by both Russia and China. The medium-range launcher can reach targets up to 1,600 kilometers away. Now, Russia says it plans to ramp up its production of medium missile systems. Katrina Besedina has the story narrated by Anne Rice.
Russia says it will increase production of and upgrade its arsenal of intermediate and shorter-range missiles. In a statement this week, Russia's foreign ministry says the action is a response to the U.S. deployment of similar missile systems to Europe and the Asia-Pacific region. And the flow of increasingly sophisticated weapons from the West to Ukraine. William Hill is from the Wilson Center.
I interpret this statement as an attempt to frighten or to deter the U.S., the U.K., United Kingdom, and France and other NATO allies from supporting Ukraine. None of this is unprecedented. It's just unsettling. It makes the situation more tense.
The statement also mentions a recent U.S. deployment of a medium-range Tomahawk cruise missile system to the Philippines, something that until 2019 was prohibited as part of the 1987 INF Arms Control Treaty between the U.S. and Russia. The United States withdrew from the INF Treaty back in 2019, accusing Russia of violating the agreement, a charge Moscow denies. Daryl Kimball is the executive director of the Arms Control Association.
So what we're seeing is that in the absence of effective arms control agreements, the United States and Russia may begin redeploying these types of weapons.
So far, Russia has rejected America's proposal to come back to the table for new arms control talks. And experts say without treaties in place, weapons production will rise. Daryl Kimball is the executive director of the Arms Control Association.
There is a possibility of an unconstrained arms race, not just between the United States and Russia, but possibly also involving China, which is also building up its nuclear arsenal.
Hill notes that in the past, Russia has threatened the use of nuclear weapons on the battlefield.
In my view, it's a very dangerous tactic. It's playing with fire, and it increases the chance of an accident. But I know from, I worked for a long time with senior figures in the Russian military. I know they understand the dangers in these weapons. I know they understand how serious even contemplating their use would be.
Russia and the United States have the largest number of nuclear weapons in the world, together holding more than 85% of the world's inventory. For Katerina Besedina in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
It's time for our listener comments, and today we start with Sabri Isaac Hamis from Yambio, Western Equatorial State, who writes, "Hello, John Tanza. The decision to deploy South Sudan People's Defense Force to arrest the situation in Tombora could have been done long time ago. Nevertheless, it's not late. The only restriction required now is that the firearms collected shouldn't go back in the hands of the community. Otherwise, several disarmaments have been conducted in this country and so many areas, but the guns still go back to the hands of the same community. We need justice and accountability to prevail in the killings and the abductions taking place in Tombora." Peter Ajak Ayom in Langamido Village, Bor, Jungle Estate writes, "Good evening, John Tanza. I don't understand where this country is heading to. The disappearance of a Catholic priest in Western Equatoria is a big shock to the country. If people of God are now targets to be hunted for, where is the heart of humanity? I'm calling on the perpetrators to keep the priest safe and also urging the government of Western Equatorial State to arrest and bring the perpetrators to book. It's really disappointing. Majak Marco Majong from Warap State in South Sudan writes, "Hello, VOA. I would like to take this opportunity to appeal to our big politicians, more especially sons and daughters from Western Equatorial State, not to fuel the ethnic violence that erupted in Tombora County." Mary from Germany writes, "Good afternoon, John Tanza. Congratulations for the last interview with Juma. It's exactly that. The governor has to be held accountable for the killings in Tombora. It is the IO militias in Namtina who comes home and attack the people. Why are these militia based in the bush? Do they belong to the current government of President Salva Kiir? If not, they have to be removed from Tombora County." Mal Adao Mal from Washington, Seattle writes, "Hello, John Tanza and South Sudan in Focus. Western Equatorial State is an epicenter for food production in South Sudan. If there is a sensible government on the ground, then the tension there needs urgent attention to restore order so that locals return to their farms." Thorn Mamor Makwet from Juba writes, "Dear John and Nabil Biagio, I wish the peace negotiations between the government of South Sudan and the holdout groups in Nairobi will bring everlasting peace in the country for citizens to at least enjoy the fruits of the long struggle to independence." Peter Goch Anyang Madongdul in Duke Padiet Jungle Estate writes, "Dear VOA, the move to have talks with the holdout groups is good news, and this will create hope to all South Sudanese whose sufferings goes beyond description, and the talks will bring peace and stability so that citizens move freely and embark on agriculture to reduce dependence on imported food and humanitarian aid." Samuel Rimo in Yei writes, "Hello, John and Nabil Biagio. The resumption of talks with the holdout groups in Nairobi through dialogue is one of the best ways to bring everlasting peace to the country. No one can talk about our problems better than us." These views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America nor the South Sudan in Focus. We now leave you with Fally Ipupa and the song "Say Yo." We've been listening to Fally Ipupa and the song "Say Yo." I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Heinle, we thank you for tuning in. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
L'amour éternel pour la vie, je te comprends, tu me comprends, on se comprend. There's love, l'amour de ma vie, à ta puissance agonie, na lile du son. Et quoi ça qui te chérie, banda konyo soit bolingo. There's love pour le meilleur et le pire, mama, pour le meilleur et le pire.